Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dynamic Dojo Show with Restita and Robert, your source for martial arts talk radio.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Welcome to Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Restita and Robert. It's August 24th, 2014, and I'm joined here at the control board with my co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how you doing this evening?
I'm good. You know, I had some trouble today.
What's that?
My tablet was giving me fits today online, and I guess they do that. And I really didn't know what to do.
What was going on? Yeah, what was
it
going
was like
on, though?
Blinking. It was, like, fading in and out. It was stopping. It was going blank all of a sudden and then fading back in. And then my touch was faded
out. Oh. You know what? When my tablet or my computer does crap like that, my go-to thing is to clean out the cache. You know, once you do that, and if you put on like some type of a system cleaner and stuff like that, then you're usually okay. But I usually clean out the cache because it like keeps stuff, you know, in there and it just keeps building up. And if you clean out the cache, you should be okay.
You know, I thought about doing that, but I really couldn't do that because I figured I couldn't clean out my cache because that's my wife and my daughter's job, clean out my cache.
Oh, my God, dude, it took me a second. I'm like, what?
Then something else happened yesterday. And my wife does this all the time, and it bugs the hell out of me. She said, and this was yesterday morning early at like 10 o'clock. She's at work. I saw her at work.
Uh-huh.
And then she says to me, she says, oh, man, you should have heard the discussion that I had with our landlord last night. You know, I'm really busy. I can't tell you right now. I'll tell you tonight. Oh, my God. How irritating is that?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, that. Because it's like, you know, no suspense at all.
Yeah, it's like either tell me now or don't tell me you've got something to tell me until you tell me.
Right?
And then this week, I've actually got people at work looking up our show, finding out that we've got this show on. And I said to them, be careful on saying stuff to me because if you say enough stuff to me and if it gets funny, it will end up on that show. Now,
All right.
Had one instance that I told about last week that you weren't around to hear. I told Michelle, our guest co-host last week, that sometimes I feel like a third-grade English teacher because there's only 5 out of 12 of us that were actually born in this country. Those are the people I work with, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And sometimes I get asked simple words. Like the other day I was asked to spell verify.
Okay.
Simple words, they don't quite have the grasp of the English language. Well, I was asked last week, before last week's show, to spell the word ones. And,
ones?
And she said, "What? Yeah, ones with an S. She said, how do you spell that? O-N-S-E? And I said, no, it's O-N-E-S or apostrophe S, depending on how it's used. How do you use it? And she said, you know, like old ones, and put her hand on my shoulder. I'm like, why the hell would you do that? And guess where it ended up? It ended up on the show.
Like old ones.
And now, it wouldn't have mattered. I don't think I would have connected it if she hadn't put her hand on my shoulder at the same time.
Sorry. Oh.
So I'm getting really excited. Now, I saw Michael Matsuda at the Martial Arts History Museum today. You're going to be down here in another 2 weeks.
Yep.
Actually, you're 2 weeks from right now, you're going to be back on your way home. You're going to be on plane.
Yep. That's right.
And we've got another fun-filled weekend planned. We've got we're going to visit the Ronald Reagan Library on Saturday, the Honor Awards on the 6th that night, and then we're going to go to Universal Studios on Sunday.
Yay!
Which that'll be really cool. I keep you just moving when you're down here.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because I figure, you know, I don't know the next time I'm going to be in there. I mean, most likely it's going to be like the next time Masters Hall of Fame happens. And you know,
exactly.
And it might be a little bit delayed next year if it happens. Yeah, you know, I mean,
it may be. And think about the stuff you've done. You know, the LA Zoo, the Gene Hopkins Heritage Museum, Hollywood Home Tour, all four museums down in Hollywood, Chinatown last time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to somebody because I didn't know if I really wanted to hang out with them or not at the Honor Award because they were at the Masters Hall of Fame, and God, I hope they're not listening. but she's talking to me, and she says, well, what's happening after the Honor Award? Because after the Masters, we have an after party at the bar where we can get together and talk for a while.
Right.
And I said, you know, Rusty and I aren't maybe sticking around all that long because we got things to do the next day. And then she asked me, who's Rusty? And I have explained to her your nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, my God, you guys are like Batman and Robin. I said, oh, my God, we've been accused of being married? There was then that girl with Johnny Rock, and this was funny, actually.
I know, right. Tell them the story.
The girl
Tell everyone
Johnny
the story.
Johnny Rockets said, you know, you're sitting on one side, I'm sitting on the other, and they want to take our picture. She comes up to us. And she says, are you guys a couple? Now, in my mind, I'm thinking a couple of what? Right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, we say, hell no.
Right?
Right? And I guess we said it so pungently, she looks at us and she says, are you guys friends?
At least, you know. Yeah, that was funny.
So now we went. Now people don't understand though. Since I've met you, we've only seen each other like I think I counted 7 times total since 2011.
Right. Yep. Yep.
And
in person,
we've been married. We've been.
We've been.
Now we're climbing.
Yeah. What else? Yeah, now we're Batman and Robin, the dynamic duo of the dynamic dojo. I kind of like the ring of that.
I do, too. And I think we actually tried that when we started the show 2 years ago.
Yeah, the dynamic. And I was like, eh.
Yeah, and then we sort of let it go.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know if I want to use that as a tagline. But we're your dynamic dojo or dynamic dojo duo, listener. Say that 10 times fast. I dare ya. All right.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Honor Awards. We're going to see good friends again, William Christopher Ford, Michael Matsuda, Chris Kadamian, and his wife Lori. Both have been, actually everybody I've named almost have been guests on our show. Chris and Lori, which I taught for last Saturday, stick class at Christmas school, is looking forward to finally meeting you. We've got Lisa King, Angie Abbott, Robert Parham, Dan Heck's going to try to make it. Now, this is going to be a small, I can't say intimate gathering, but it's going to be smaller than the Masters. This Masters is about 460. Michael is limiting this to 180, and he's at about 170 now.
Oh, cool.
So it's almost sold out, and I'm glad of that because that thing will hold about 240 people, so he's like cutting it off 60 people early.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
going to
be
well,
a real
smart.
Nice gathering. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that way there'll be enough room for people to literally like stretch out a little bit rather than being like so close, you know, like the tables being like all jammed together and stuff like that. And it'll be really fun. It'll be really great to see everyone like, you know, twice in the same year. So that'll be cool.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be very cool.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to seeing everybody again.
Yeah, me too. It'll be a blast. So for our listeners out there, our phone number is 347-677-0699, and it's open mic night again. It's open mic night, so call in, tell us about your dojo, tell us about any upcoming events that you guys are going to be having, the whole nine yards. You know, if you have something you want to talk about, you want to rave about something, rant about something, feel free to call in. 347-677-0699. All right. Well, with that said, let's move on with the show. So who do we have for our birthday segment? We've got some birthdays here.
We do. And actually, for the first time in a long time, most of them are yours. mine, I only had one this week, and mine is Guru Dirk. His birthday is on 8/28, and the rest of them are yours.
Oh, okay. Well, there are two other people whose birthdays are on the 28th of August. We've got Jack Panotes on the 28th, and one of my old students, Robert Steitler. He's one of our first black belts under the Seattle One Hopkindo / Body Movement Arts incarnation. So he's having that. They're both having their birthdays on the 28th. Another one of my Tai Chi students, Roxanne Smith, she's having her birthday on the 25th. That's tomorrow. Wow. An old Botokukan Karate friend of mine, Youngmin Kim, Sensei Youngmin Kim, his birthday's on the 29th. And Soke Robert Hill, also of Botokukan Karate and also a alumni of the Masters Hall of Fame and was a guest on our show. His birthday is on the 30th. And an old Kajikembo friend of mine, Kevin Cornwell, his birthday is on the 30th as well. So for everyone out there having a birthday, this tune's, I can't even find my birthday tune. Oh, here we go. This tune's for you. Maybe. Push the button.
Today's your birthday. Mine goes into you. Today's your birthday. We're gonna have a good time. Today's your birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Birthday, everybody. Enjoy the birthday week. I always love that tune. how they yell at the end. Anyway, all right. So let's get into random announcements and events and stuff like that. Other than the Martial Arts History Museum Hall of Honors. Do you have any cool events on your end over there?
Nah, my end, not this week.
Oh, okay. Oh, speaking of your end, down there in the southern area of California, did you guys get any inkling of that earthquake up in the Bay Area? I mean, do earthquakes travel that far?
No, the Bay Area is like 350 miles from here.
Oh, okay. Okay. Huh. Okay, just wondering, because I remember that when we had our big earthquake over here in, like, I forgot what year it was, what we called the Nisqually earthquake, there were people, like, all the way up in, like, Vancouver that were feeling it. But then again, I think they're under 300 miles. I know they're like, oh, maybe not. I don't know. But they were feeling it up there, and some people down in Oregon were feeling it. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Wow.
What's going on? But, you know, there's a lot of people that are wondering about, you know, whether or not all these, like, earthquakes down on this coast are a precursor to something bigger somewhere. But I don't know. I'd much rather not think about it right now.
Yeah, me either. I remember the one big one that they had in Frisco, because about 25 years ago, and you mentioned that online today. After they had that, I remember trying to get a hold of the late Brendan Lye for like days and could not get it through. Now, Charles Shepard, that lives in the Bay Area, announced that he's okay, which is a good thing.
Good. Yeah, I sent out a generic, like, hey, Bay Area friends, you okay down there? And I heard from some people, and I don't remember if I haven't checked the Facebook yet, so I haven't don't know if I heard from Charles yet, but hope you're okay down there, Sifu Charles, and all my friends down there, Sifu Sonia Richardson and everybody. All right. Well, let's see. In other random announcements, I found out not too long ago that the Wing Luke Asian Museum here in Seattle will be featuring a big exhibit of Bruce Lee's life, and it's going to be running for 3 years here in Seattle. This is great, and I'll go ahead and read the the press release here. The Wing Luke Museum of the Asian Pacific American Experience, or simply known as quote unquote the Wing, is presenting an exhibit called Do You Know Bruce? A new exhibit about the global martial arts and cultural icon Bruce Lee. The exhibit will run for 3 years and will likely be the most attended exhibit in the 5-year history of the Wing, which is located in Seattle's International District, which is what we call Chinatown, at 719 South King Street. Now, the Wing Luke Asian Arts Museum has been around for a long, long time. But this incarnation, the Wing Luke Museum of Asian Pacific American Experience, has been in this incarnation for only 5 years. And they used to be a part of the Seattle Art Museum and moved to Chinatown. Of all places, where to put an Asian history museum? In Chinatown.
Go figure.
But this exhibit will explore Bruce Lee's personal story and connection to Seattle. And as many people know, Bruce Lee arrived in Seattle in 1959, where he attended the University of Washington, met and married his wife, Linda, opened his first martial arts studio, and was ultimately laid to rest next to his son, Brandon, who followed in his father's footsteps as a martial arts movie star. Now, this exhibit is the only exhibit outside of Hong Kong presenting an in-depth look into Bruce Lee's life, featuring never-before-seen belongings, letters, writings, and equipment from his martial arts studios. This is going to be really, really cool. Now, the Wing is preparing for the upcoming exhibition by actually creating a new space, especially for it. Now, a pre-exhibit gathering is going to take place on Saturday, September 13th, with a Bruce Lee cocktail party from 5 to 6:30 p.m., and attendees will be among the first to see a few of the Bruce Lee artifacts and treasures that will be included in the exhibition. Now, tickets to this are going to be $75 and will be available through the Wing Luke website at wingluke.org. That's WINGLUKE.org. But get your tickets soon, folks, because space is limited. So it doesn't quite say when the actual opening is. I could have sworn I saw something about October or something like that, so early October. So, but the preview will be September 13th. So get your tickets, drinks, cocktails, and hors d'oeuvres, $75, folks, wingluke.org, 3 years. So if anyone visits Seattle, look me up, because I will always go see it with you guys. Anyway, all right, I think that's it for my announcements. Do you have any?
No, not tonight.
No? Okay, cool. Well, let's keep the show rolling again. And for our listeners out there, join the fun. It's open mic night, 347-677-0699, or we are on the chat board. Let me go over here and check to see who we got there. Oh, we've got Deb on the chat board. How you doing, Deb? Just wave on the chat board. Let me know that you can hear us, okay? All right. All right, so let's move on to the health news then. Okie dokie. Health tips, actually. And since we're getting really close for kids going back to school, I just want to read off some things about the importance of exercise for those kids. Now, you know, kids go to school and they have recess and stuff like that, but for the kids that don't want to do recess or think that team games are stupid or whatever, I want everyone to know about the six best reasons that kids should get exercise. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be karate. It could be some type of team sport. It could be just a co-ed gathering at the local community center, whatever. But the best things about kids exercise. Number one, your child will feel less stressed. Number two, they can feel better about themselves through the exercise because it's a feeling of accomplishment, right? Number three, the kids will feel more ready to learn in school. Number four, keep a healthy weight. Number five, it helps kids build sturdy muscles, bones, and joints, which is going to be important as they grow. And number six, it helps them sleep better at night. Now, for us as parents, okay, we all know that more time in front of the TV means less time getting outside and playing and running and exercising. So, parents, we need to limit the TV, video games, and computer time. They should set a good example by being physically active themselves. So, you know, rather than yelling at kids and saying, you should get out more while while you're sitting there, you know, get out there with your kids, okay? I guess it depends on whether or not your kids want to be seen exercising with you. I wasn't one of those kids. I wanted karate was my thing. I didn't want my parents to come and watch me. I didn't want my parents to be a part of it. That was my thing. Oh, my goodness. All right. Now, exercising can be fun for everyone. So some easy ways for kids to stay active include walking or biking to school, jumping rope, going to the playground, and participating in organized team sports programs. Now, the last time I told my kids this, that jumping rope was a great exercise, a lot of the boys went, that's for girls. But have you guys seen some of the crazy cool tricks that you can do with jump ropes? There's this guy on YouTube that does these crazy cool tricks with a jump rope. I'll have to find it and post it up on the page so that way I can forward it to my kids and go, see, he's a dude. Anyway, now another important thing, kids out there, if you're listening, get enough sleep. All right, nodding off in school is not very cool. It kind of makes you look bad, and it's not going to really keep you all that healthy. Now, a study that was funded by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute links poor sleep in teens, well, teens meaning like 13 to 16 years old, linking teens to higher blood pressure. Higher blood pressure, kids. You don't want it. Researchers found that teens who got less than 6.5 hours of sleep per night were 2.5 times more likely to have elevated blood pressure than teens who slept longer. Also, teens who had trouble falling asleep or staying asleep were 3.5 times more likely to have high blood pressure or pre-high blood pressure than teens who slept well. These results are similar to findings from other studies in adults. High blood pressure, if left untreated, can increase the risk of stroke and heart diseases later in life. So, sleep fact number one. School-aged children and teens need at least 9 hours of sleep a night. Adults need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. Sleep tip number two, set a sleep schedule. Whew, that's another tongue twister. Set a sleep schedule, going to bed and waking up the same time every day. Keep room temperature on the cool side and keep the TV and the computer out of the bedroom because it will be a distraction, especially for today's plugged-in teens. So anyway, those are some tips for keeping healthy throughout the school year. And get started early, folks, kids, with the sleep schedule because, you know, that first week of school is always going to be tough, especially if you're going to a new school. You know, the stress of, you know, do I know anyone? Will people like me? What are my classes like? You know, get your sleep early or get your sleep schedule set early. All right. I think that's it for my health news. I think it's time for
Weird News.
It is, and you know, you said something funny. It's funny with my daughter. She doesn't mind working out. She goes to the school and works out now. It's just And she's glad, though, that she only had to take 2 years of PE because she hates mandatory exercise. Not that she doesn't do it, but she hates being told she has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's just glad she doesn't have to do it the next 2 years. So, now,
I agree.
Where is, in relationship to you, where is Richland, Washington?
Richland?
I think it's out
east. I don't remember because I drive by it when I'm going, like to places. I just don't know where it is. It's in South Washington. So it's like around Yakima. So, southeast. It's southeast. So you have to go over the mountain.
Southeast. Oh, got it.
Yeah.
This story happened in Richland.
Okay.
A 40-year-old woman tackled a 20-year-old man fleeing from police in Washington State.
What the
hell? Then taunted him. Yeah. And then taunted him about being taken down by a grandmother.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Could you imagine? She's like, was coming and laughing. Richland Police Captain Mike Cobb tells the Tri-City Herald that Becky Powell was driving by Wednesday when she saw the man run from the officers. She told her husband to speed up ahead of the fleeing man and got out to confront him. Powell says the man tried to stiff arm her, but I don't know why this word is there, but she felled him. F-E-L-L-E-D.
Yeah, but felled. Yeah, okay. But she felled him, pulling down his shorts in the process.
Right, exactly. So he was trying to stiff arm her. She dropped to the ground and tackled it, avoiding the stiff arm.
Uh-huh.
Pulling the shorts down the process. She says she got help pinning the man down and asked him how it felt to be taken down by a mother of five and a grandmother of three. Cobb says police appreciated Powell's actions, but warned people not to get involved in police matters. Cobb says the man ran because he had an outstanding warrant. You know, it was a nice thing to try to help the police out, but don't put yourself in danger. This guy could have had a weapon, a knife, a gun, and then you could get caught in a crossfire. It was really lucky for this woman that nobody got hurt.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you first read that story, I was like, that was kind of a stupid thing to do, but but going neener. Yeah, exactly. But for her to go neener, 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 what's it like to get taken down by a grandmother? She like all thought it was like fight night or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so now we move on to entertainment news. Did you know that Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey were having problems?
You know,
I had no clue.
I haven't really been following Mariah Carey's personal life, so I really didn't even know who she was married to.
Nice. Well, and I didn't know there was such an age difference. He's 33, she's 44. Well, Nick Cannon confirmed separate living arrangements with Mariah Carey. Nick Cannon has confirmed to the insider that there is trouble in paradise. The America's Got Talent host, 33, opened up to the insider guest co-host, Chris Spencer, about his marital issues with wife Mariah Carey, 44, saying, "We have been living in separate houses for a few months."
Mm-hmm.
There were several clues that the couple was on the rocks. They hadn't been photographed together in months. This was the first year that they didn't have a vow renewal. They even spent Valentine's Day alone, and they sold their Bel Air mansion. While the couple seems to have hit a rough patch, Cannon denied rumors of infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
"My main focus is on my kids," said Cannon. Cannon and Carey, who wed in 2008, share 3-year-old twins together. So, well, that is too bad. That's a shame. But you know what? They've got stupid money. I mean, they've got such stupid money. Mariah has hired somebody that does nothing but follow her around and hold her drinks for her.
Are you serious?
That
really?
She's got a drink.
She's got a drink valet. She can't hold her own drink.
Right. Well, I call her a drink lackey.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess maybe that would actually make sense. So it's more of like a drink bodyguard, I guess, I would imagine. So no one can, like, slip a Mickey, you know, probably. Because I've been Mickey before, and, you know, that would suck if someone managed to Mickey Mariah.
You know how many people she's got around her.
And my
wife just pointed at me just now and said, you'd want that job.
To be a drink lackey. If she's going to pay like $100 an hour, yeah, you know, I'll be a drink lackey. I'll be the plate carrier to follow her around at buffets and stuff. You know?
For $100 an hour, I will spoon feed her.
Right. I guess those people get $200 an hour because you have to get within the circle, right?
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Alrighty. So a reminder to our listeners, it's open mic night. After the break, we're going to be talking about anything and everything that y'all want to talk about. So our phone number here is 347-677-0699. We've also got the chat board if you're listening through Blog Talk Radio on our show marquee. So if that's the end of the entertainment news, let's take a quick 2 minute and 30 second break, and we'll get into talking about some cool stuff. I do want to talk about the importance of forms a little bit later, so we'll be right back after this.
Hey, MMA fighter Jason Mayhem Miller here. School bullying and cyberbullying statistics are increasingly viewed as an important contributor to youth violence, including homicide and suicide. Let's kick bullying together. Go to WeKickingIt.com.
This is Annie Lennox of Eurythmics, or RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive if someone else has been drinking. Thank you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is Guru Rocky Twitchell of Citrus Heights, California. And you are listening to the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Dynamic Dojo Show with Restita M. Robert, your source for martial arts talk radio.
All righty, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Restita M. Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699, and we have a chat board on our Blog Talk Radio show marquee. So it's open mic night, and give us a call. Just join the fun. Let's talk about anything and everything, and let's shoot the breeze. All right. So earlier,
I got a couple things. Well, it was funny at the end. Well, one, I've never understood that Annie Lennox spot where it says if somebody's been, you don't drive if someone else has been drinking. Isn't that what the designated driver is for?
What did she say? Did she say, you know, don't drive if someone else has been drinking?
Don't drive if somebody else has been drinking?
Really? Now I need to, like, play it again. Hold on.
Oh, great. All right. Started the prop here.
Yeah.
And then
because,
there was that part where you said, y'all. And you said,
y'all.
At,
y'all,
at,
yeah.
At the, just, I was thinking, what is that? Southern Filipino?
Yeah, Southern Filipino. Yeah, must be the old Beacon Hill thing. Beacon Hill was like the melting pot neighborhood when I was growing up. You know, like, you know how like certain neighborhoods have like certain demographics. You know what I mean? You know, like Bellevue over here is like rich, mainly rich Caucasian. You know what I mean? At least back in the day, it was like rich Caucasian people, right? And Mercer Island. And then you've got like Mount Baker, and you've got like Beacon Hill and South Park and White. So anyway, the Beacon Hill was one of the diverse neighborhoods, right? So we had people from all over. We had Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, Vietnamese, Russian, like everybody, you know, and the Caucasian people, you know, we had a lot of Southerners that lived near me and stuff like that, and used to hang out with the kids there. I think that must be a throwback from back then, y'all.
You were naming some really rich neighborhoods. I must know, where in relationship does Bill Gates live? Because he's the richest neighbor you're ever going to have.
If I remember correctly, he lives in, good Lord, I think he lives in Bellevue or Woodinville. I don't remember. Does anybody out there know? Because, you know, all I know is that he's the richest guy in the world right now, and he lives here. I just don't know where he lives. Does anyone know? Oh, he lives over by Lake Washington, so it could be Mercer Island. Let me see here. He could, actually. In fact, here's his. He's got an earth shelter house. Okay, it's architectural style is called Pacific Lodge, and it's very automated. So he's got like automated skylights and solar panels and stuff like that. He's actually in the Medina neighborhood. And this really kind of sucks because on Wikipedia it gives his full address. But
are you serious?
Yeah, but I think he's got his own police force that guards the grounds. Yeah, because
sure.
His house is actually $63.2 million. It costs $63.2 million to build. You know, complete with the automated something, and its nickname is Xanadu.
Xanadu,
66,000 square feet of living space. 66,000
wow.
square feet. I mean, you need to give visitors a map to go to the bathrooms. I mean, that's how big this is. Oh, my God. It says here that the house features an estate-wide server system. I don't know what that means. I'm guessing it's a server, you know. You think computers? It's got a 60-foot swimming pool with an underwater music system, a 2,500-square-foot gym, a 1,000-square-foot dining room, heated floors and driveways. Guests, check this out. Guests wear pins that automatically adjust temperature, music, and lighting based on their preferences upon entering a room. So if you're a visitor there and you happen to be staying with them, you can set up your pin and wear it around, and any room you go into, it will check the environmental controls to match what you want. How cool is that?
Wow.
That's awesome.
That is.
Wow, Wikipedia, gotta love that. But 66,000 square feet, I mean, that's like bigger than a warehouse. You know, it's like bigger than Amazon's warehouse when they started. It's
well, yeah, when they started, you know, now they have a warehouse in Ontario, California. It's like 1 million square feet.
Yeah, yeah, there are warehouses everywhere. I mean, Amazon over here is crazy, and you know, just yeah. Anyhow, I'm not going to complain about traffic. I'm not going to complain about traffic. It's all the Amazon, Boeing, and Microsoft people. Anyhow.
And Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of which, since it's open mic night, I guess I can rant about this. Seattle, I swear, goes through more Department of Transportation roadwork than at once than I think any other city does, I think. And they have to close major highways to do it, like 99. All the Seattle people listening are probably, you know, shaking their heads up and down and going, yeah, let's bitch about 99. They closed 99 on Friday, and it's not set to open until 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. So the weekend, okay? On top of that, there was a preseason Seahawks game. And so, yeah, and one of the only ways to get to the field, to Safeco Field, where the Seahawks play, is 99. And they closed it. So everyone's on I-5, right? And it just made traffic just so ugly. On top of people getting out of work Friday from Microsoft, Amazon, and Boeing, you know, and people coming in to get ready for the game and stuff like that. Oh my gosh, really? Jeez. Really? Well, come on, Seattle.
I thought I had a bad on Thursday. I had a job walk in Studio City. I punched it into my GPS Thursday morning, 7:30 I leave, 7.2 miles. It took me an hour.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
The street I had to take to this place was all jacked up. They were laying new pipes, so there's one lane now. And not only was it only one lane, there was a street sweeper in front of me. And I was a block from a main intersection, one block. It took me 8 light cycles to go through that intersection.
Wow, that's crazy.
It was just absolutely nuts. And you live in one of the metropolitan areas. There's probably only a dozen metropolitan areas where it would take you an hour to go 7 miles.
Yeah, that's pretty much how long it took me. Yeah, that's pretty much how long it took me to get to my little ninja birthday party that I had to do yesterday. And this neighborhood, Magnolia, is just on the other side of Seattle proper. And from where my school is, technically all I'd have to do is drop down a hill and go past the First Avenue Bridge and hit 99, exit, go down a hill and across, and I'm there. It would take me only about 15 minutes. And this is all freeway speed. It just zip right across the way there if I took 99. But no, 99 had to be closed. So the only way that I could get to Magnolia was to go around. So I had to go all the way around to get to I-5, go down I-5, which was all jacked up because everyone's trying to get to the game, right?
Right.
And Boeing and Amazon and Microsoft, you know, that kind of thing. On a Saturday, of all things, it took me an hour. It took me, no, I take that back, a little more than an hour. Because
wow.
I left at about like 12:50 from my school, and I got there right at 2 p.m. when I was supposed to start. And I was like, really? Really? So, yeah. It sucks.
Oh, so did you guys ever get taken care of those, that really bad...
Going. Let's talk about that too, and then we'll talk about form. So stay tuned, folks. We are going to talk martial arts here, but it is open mic. So if you want to talk about something else, you know, call in. But we will talk about forms a little bit later because this is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. Okay, so a few days ago, Thursday, as a matter of fact, Thursday night, one of my Tai Chi students comes into my studio and says, hey, Sifu, you know, what's that smell outside? Do you smell that? I'm like, I don't know. What are you talking about? And she said, you know, I wonder if that truck that I saw pull in was just dumping some, you know, rotting garbage or something like that. And I went, well, you know, let's go take a look. So I go out the back and she's like, oh, you better be careful. I mean, it smells bad. It smells like bad. And I'm like, how bad could it be? It's garbage, right? So I go through the back door and I come around into the parking lot, and we've got like two big dumpsters, right? One's for garbage and one's for recycling, the big commercial kind, not the little ones, right? So we've got this big commercial dumpster. And I look at the garbage dumpster, and there's water pouring out of it. I'm like, why is there water pouring out of it, right? And a good amount of water, too, because it was pouring out, leaking underneath, and pouring out into the parking lot, and the whole parking lot smelled like, pardon my French, it smelled like shit. It smelled like rotting something. I thought, oh my God, what's in the dumpster? Is somebody in the dumpster? This is what I'm thinking. It smells like something had died. So I'm like, okay. And I'm approaching the dumpster, and one of my students gets out of her car, and she steps in the water. And she's like, holy shit, what is that? I'm like, you smell it too. She's like, oh my God, the whole parking lot smells like it. And I mean, it was so bad that you could taste it. It was that bad. It was just pukey, right? Well, anyway, so I decided to open up the dumpster, but I held the lid at arm's length, and I opened it, and I started slowly trying to get my head over the top, right? And all I saw was the rump end of what appeared to be an animal. It was just the rump end, and in water, because you know the dumpster was like in water. The stuff was in water. All I saw was a rump end and a big tail. And I kind of gasped a little bit. So that meant I got the full shot of rotting whatever that was, right? So I gasped, and I get that full shot of nasty. I slam the lid, and we both get the full wind shot of nasty, and we start running. And we're like gasping, and that's not helping because the water that was running out of there was stinking too. So we're basically inhaling nasty, rotting, fleshy odor type stuff, right? Oh, it was awful. I stood in front of the school, and I think I tried to puke, but nothing came out. I was just like, I got inside and like shut the door, and luckily, you know, pretty airtight, right? I was like, oh my God, it smells like death out there. And the students were like, it does. It smells like something died. I'm like, it's an animal. It's an animal. And who the hell would dump their dead, rotting animal in there? I mean, they had to, for it to smell like that, they had to have kept it for a while before they dumped it. I mean, come on. You know, isn't that considered illegal dumping?
Well, they must have done it at night or something where nobody saw.
No, I think they must have did it before the Tai Chi class and after Mighty Mites class, because I was out there earlier. I had like dumped a bunch of stuff into the recycling and dumped our week's worth of garbage in the dumpster, and there was nothing in the dumpster. So I think the truck that my Tai Chi student initially saw when she came in was probably the thing she saw, which explains why the water was still leaking out of the bottom of the dumpster, because it was like soon before I went out there. So, but it smelled bad. I mean, you know, standing out in front of my school, you could smell it, and the dumpster is like around the corner in the parking lot, right? I'm like, oh gosh, if the wind changes, we're screwed, right? And every student that came in that night, what the hell's that smell? What the hell's that smell? What died, you know? It was just awful. So, but because I didn't want to actually look in there, and because it smelled so bad, you know, the students were like, so, you know, what if it's not an animal? What if it just looked like one to you? What if it is someone? You see, you know, and I'm like, oh, shoot, okay, I'll call the police. So I had to call the sheriff, right, which is weird because when we were in Seattle, we called the police. Now that we're in White Center, which is just outside of West Seattle, like King County, it's like unincorporated King County, we have to call the sheriff now. So yeah, we have to call the sheriff. So called the sheriff, and they sent over somebody, and the sheriff came inside and said, yeah, there's like two small rodents. Two small animals in your dumpster. And I'm like, that stink does not smell like squirrels and rats.
Right.
I mean, that's disgusting. And, but yeah, so anyhow, so I went, okay, well, I guess I'll call waste management. So next, Deborah goes, oh, poor deputy. funny thing was that when he came in, he brought the stink in with him. I'm like, gee, thanks, officer. But anyhow, the next day I called Waste Management. And Waste Management says, if the carcasses are in the dumpster, we cannot swap out your dumpsters. And I went, what? Yeah, you know, if they're not bagged and if they're sitting plain as day in the dumpster in its fluids, we cannot take it because then it becomes biohazard. And I'm like, okay, so who do I call? And they said, call animal control. Okay, I'm going to call animal control. So I called animal control. And animal control asked me, is it a dog or a cat? And I said, I don't know. I didn't stick my head in there to find out because I didn't want to see anything rotting dead. I mean, it smelled like it was dead, really, really dead. I mean, it was like, you know, it smelled like, you know, advanced stages of decomp. It was that bad.
Oh, wow.
I'm starting to, like, dry heave just thinking about it. But, and animal control said, well, if it's not a dog or a cat or a domesticated animal, we can't take it. We don't do anything with wildlife. That would be the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I'm like,
right.
Well, but why is it sometimes I see animal control trucks out there, you know, carrying raccoons and stuff like that? I don't get it. Is that, you know? I mean, come on. And she said, well, let me give you some advice. You're not going to like it. I'm like, oh, God. She's like, you're going to have to bag the carcasses. So that way Waste Management will take it. And I'm like, are you serious? Really? Why is it my job to get rid of dead, rotting carcasses? Since when is it my job to do that? You know, why can't the garbage
right.
people take care of it? Why can't animal control come take care of it? I mean, when does it become the consumer's job? I was pissed. So and that's when I placed that complaint on Facebook. I was just like, I'm not getting in there. You know, I mean, that's a bacteria and God knows what, you know, these animals had and, you know, I'm putting myself at risk. I mean, no. Well, you know, save the day. Here comes Marina Kosenko, who was a previous guest on our show. I mean, she had like hip waiter boots, she had gas masks, she had like respirator, she had up to the elbow gloves and, you know, all sorts of stuff that, you know, that she had when she was in the military. And she came over, put her goggles on and, you know, went to work and she sent me off to go get baking soda. So I bought 4 pounds of baking soda. And by the time I got back, all the carcasses were bagged. And we just poured the whole baking soda thing into the dumpster, and now we're fine. Now we're just going to wait for Waste Management to come and dump it and swap out our dumpster.
So, I know you didn't see it, but what did Marina say they were?
Possums. And
they were
bloated, nasty, like bloated, like, you know, if you moved them, they would have exploded, kind of bloated. And because she took a picture of this. But she didn't post it on Facebook because she didn't want anyone to tag it as inappropriate or anything like that. It was disgusting. It was like 2 possums, big possums too, and they were bloated and veins like all showing and just abdomens distended and sitting in its own fluid and just nasty and a skull. So there must have been 3. There had to have been 3 possums, but one of them had like a freshly white skull. There was like nothing on it. So I surmise that people had kept these dead rotting possums like in a big tub of water or something, because that'll keep the smell down, right? And then they just dumped the whole crap in our dumpster. And that's probably, that explains why there's hay in the parking lot too. So I don't know where they're from. You know, I'm hoping they didn't like go through all the trouble of like driving in from Auburn, which is Kent, the nearest place where you can have a farm, I guess, you know, to drive in all the way from there to dump their crap. You know, I mean, that's just disgusting. Folks, if you bury your dead animals or take them to a rendering plant or something or bury it. I mean, who the heck saves dead possums?
Right.
Anyway, that was my rant for the evening. let's move on. Okay, a subject near and dear to my heart, and that's forms. Now, Sifu Bob, you brought up this subject about forms. Can you tell our listeners why you brought up this subject? It was based on a post that somebody else had posted, right?
Yeah, John Border had posted, let me look real quick, because he worded it a certain way about forms, about, you know, basically about it being a library or our forms useless, right? And I'm trying to look that up right now, and my tablet, the other, because John Border, whoops, there you
go. I see something that's called Kata is the soul of martial arts, agree or disagree. And then there's...
That's it.
Oh, okay.
Kata is the soul of martial arts, right.
Yeah, and then the and then it's just discussion. A lot of people in this discussion, posted a lot of great stuff. Like one gentleman here says that discipline is the soul of the martial arts. Another person said kata is the meditation of the movement. Another person made a great point. He says, I like kata and utilize it, but I completely understand why most people don't like it. Most bunkai, or application, is not practical at all, and I have a totally different take on it. I have a totally different take on it that works for me. And that's a good point. And bunkai is a big thing about this. It's true. It's a library, you know, and that's a great post, Sensei Border. Thank you for sharing that on Facebook. What drives me up the wall is people that say forms are useless, kata, or quen, or taolu, however you want to call it, pumse, palgoi, whatever you want to call it. Forms are useless. Forms are stuck in the old ages, and they're not needed anymore, and blah, 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 blah. And my favorite comment to hate is, well, Bruce Lee didn't do forms. And I got to go, oh, my God, stop using Bruce as an excuse to be lazy, you know? you know what I mean? It's kind of like, I do see why people don't like it. You have to take the time to memorize something. Oh, God forbid that you got to use your brain to memorize something. right?
Right.
But, you know, my take on it is, you know, it's a library that keeps an art what it is, an art, right? There's martial art, and then there's martial I had a word for it too, but there's the art part, and then there's the strictly fighting part of it. Like, I was just going to call it
the war aspect.
Yeah, the war aspect of it, or just the martial aspect of it. So there's the art part, and then there's the practical, you know, martial part of it. Okay, and that's fine. Most martial arts will have both, I believe. Some martial systems will have just fighting, and some will have just forms. But for the most part, you know, I think that most fighting martial arts, most systems that tout themselves as a martial art, will have a little bit of both, fighting and the art part. I like what John said. It's like a library, a history book of sorts of what the masters of old did, and we're just passing down the library, right? It's a good point because, you know, I might have a book here in my hands that was written by a Tai Chi master like 100 years ago, right? But
right.
That doesn't mean that I'm going to, you know, do this form this way or use it in this way, because times change. And any good martial artist will know that if you practice forms, it's going to give you a whole slew of benefits, such as strong legs, right? Strong legs, great cardiovascular capability, a keen knowledge of your own body awareness, you know, the ability to make your movements sound stable and powerful without, you know, flopping around all over the place and looking like a dingbat, you know, and a whole host of other stuff. And if you're good enough at your forms, you will be able to apply the concept of the movement, not the actual movement as it was written in stone. But the people that don't practice forms don't know that. So they, you know, I think that's why they say, oh, forms are shitty. They're useless. They're stupid. Now, considering that people use the excuse of, well, Bruce doesn't do forms, so, and he did Jeet Kune Do, and he made the way of no way. You don't need forms. Now, I don't do Jeet Kune Do, but you do, Bob. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are, you know, he was involved in Wing Chun 15 to 20 years before he ever applied Jeet Kune Do concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't like, I'm going to catch crap for that, but I don't like the word concepts either because it was a way of doing things. He learned Sulam Tao, Bar Chum Dao, Chum Q, Buji. He learned all these forms. Now, you and I had a discussion before the show, and I strongly believe that drills are also forms. Now, anybody that uses the Bruce Lee theory, you know, not Bruce Lee's personal theory, but have developed their own thoughts and saying, oh, Bruce didn't believe in forms. Well, yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
But because he also did the drills that went along with it, he still did, you know, even if he threw away the Sulam Tao and the Bar Chum Dao and the Chum Q and all these other forms and didn't do them, and I'm not saying he did or didn't because I was, when he died, I was like seven.
Mm-hmm.
He still did Chi Sao, Chi Shir. These drills to sharpen the skill level, which are a part of the forms.
So he still did do them. And a lot of people, it really amazes me when people that don't, you know, practice Jeet Kune Do type stuff or whatever, where, you know, like I call them the YouTube and book warriors, the people that have never set foot training with a coach or anything like that, or training even with a student of martial arts. I love how they, like, you know, think that they can watch YouTube and stuff like that and make up their own thing and then have the excuse, well, Bruce Lee didn't have forms, so my art won't. And now I'm like the Soke, you know, 12th Dan founder of, you know, I do my own shit dough. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? We have somebody on the line that may give us some insight. Do you want to take a call?
Sure, let's go ahead and take it.
Go ahead.
All right. Area code 405. You're on Dynamic Dojo. Who are we speaking with?
Oh, you guys are funny. You guys just brought me in, huh?
Oh, you know what? Your number, this is Grandmaster Daryl Sargent.
Oh.
You know, your number, when it popped up on my board, it was out of context. So I'm like, who's 405? You know what it was? Yeah. So, woohoo! Thanks for joining us, Grandmaster Daryl.
No problem. I just tuned in to the make your own shit up dough thing. So,
pardon my French, but
I got a couple of seconds of no forms or forms or something. What? So talk to me.
Yeah, what's going on is that, you know, forms are very near and dear to my heart, and I was kind of ranting about how people will say, well, forms are useless, and they're good for nothing, and they won't teach you how to fight, and they will use Bruce Lee as a excuse for their, you know, for their desire to not do them, and This discussion actually came about because Sifu Bob had seen a Facebook post from another friend of ours, John Border. And his question on Facebook was, kata is the soul of martial arts, agree or disagree? And a lot of great responses were on there. Like one gentleman said that that discipline is the soul of martial arts, which kind of points toward, you know, kata and, perfecting the moves and stuff like that. That kata is the meditation of the movement, and that bunkai is a good benefit from it. And I added that, you know, through kata development and trying to perfect your moves through kata, it gives you great cardiovascular capability, gives you strong legs, gives you a sense of discipline to find that movement that actually displays power and brings good power into play using your center and your waist and your hips and your legs and stuff like that, all in a compact package called kata. And it's a great thing to do, that I thought. And then me and Bob were talking about we started talking about the people that pretty much just get on YouTube and buy books and become masters that way. And that's where make your own shit up dough comes from.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
I got you.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a couple of
different ways to kind of look at it. You know, I look at it, I primarily can use more of a Southeast Asian martial arts background than my actual traditional Japanese karate background in terms of the training with forms. You know, as far as forms, when I was studying traditional karate, we didn't learn a tremendous amount of the bunkai, or the bunkai was so
outdated,
unrealistic, just so like the teachers really weren't knowledgeable about the in-depth behind the scene stuff of the movements that. Mm-hmm. Really, it wasn't as relevant as I would have wanted. That says nothing against them.
Right.
But there are many today that are leaving their teachers very early that never learned the actual deeper meanings, the bunkai, the himitsu, the oyo, to these forms. And so when you don't have all of that in terms of the understanding to the forms, then it just leaves you as doing some surface type of bunkai, and that surface type of bunkai just is not the depth of what that maybe that art or that system was truly meant to be. But then when you go into the Southeast Asian side, when I go into more of my Silat training, of course, Mahaguru Cliff Stewart is very his depth of info within the confines of his jurus, that's when I began to understand the deeper perspectives and deeper meanings of jurus or katas or forms or whatever you want to be. When it goes from a basic core movement to a maybe movement that deals with your principles, and then it goes down to movements that deal with points and how to use different things like footwork in application to things on the body. So really it goes into who the teacher is, their depth of information in regard to the deeper meanings of the forms, and then exactly what it is that they derive out of it to make it a more realistic a more realistic thing for practical application.
And I think that's where one of the reasons why a lot of people don't like forms, it's because, you know, yeah, I'll admit a lot of the traditional quote-unquote bunkai is impractical by today's standards. It's very like, it, you know, they would work if you were defending against a samurai or you know or something like that, but I was telling Bob a little bit earlier, or no, maybe it was before we got on the show. I think we were in the green room. I said something to the nature of that a lot of people tend to look at the movements of the kata and just assume that, you know, like if I'm going to do a downward block and a forward stance in a kata, that I have to do the move that way when I defend myself, right? And it actually took my introduction into the Filipino martial arts. So again with the Southeast Asian martial arts, it taught the Filipino martial arts taught me how to look beyond the outward jacket of the, you know, traditional form and to learn what is that teaching my body to do body mechanic wise. What type of movement is it teaching me? Is it teaching me advance, retreat, same side movement, reverse side movement, which hip is for, you know, it's teaching me something inherent within the body. And it made me look at my own karate forms a whole heck of a lot differently. I'm like, holy crap. I mean, you know, I revisit my karate forms every now and again, and I go, oh my goodness, there's a wealth of knowledge here that I didn't know was there when I was doing karate. And I had done karate for like, you know, about 20 years before I got into the Filipino martial arts. But I think, you know, a lot of people get their knowledge of what form is from what they're used to, what they're used to doing. Kind of like you said, it depends on the teacher. And you know, my teacher was really good. But the funny thing was though, is he never really taught bunkai for bunkai's sake. He would just, you know, he would have us practice kata, and then we would spar, and that was how we learned. You know, it was up to us to make that connection, as opposed to spoon feeding it to us. But even then, you know, I was so used to doing things the karate way. You know, my outlook on the martial arts was still very like one-dimensional at that point. That's all I did was karate for 20 years. And yeah, and then walking out into Filipino martial arts, and I was like, wow, this is a completely, you know, different way of looking at things. And it really like opened my eyes to stuff in that
aspect.
Don't forget the
time frame. You're talking 20 years ago. So you're talking about your teacher coming up in a time where a lot of times those guys only stayed with one particular art form or one particular style or system. And so when they did that, they only had one particular viewpoint of how to look at the forms. And if they were not going deeper by their teachers into the applications of the form, then you couldn't expect them to go deeper into applications of the form.
Exactly.
So when you look at Filipino martial arts, you're looking at a method of core movement. And when you look at the movements behind what we do in the Kali and the Arnis and the Eskrima, the core movements are the same, but then it gets you into a very much deeper perspective of meaning of movement. And now it starts saying that your karate does have weapon application to it, and that your karate does have a different if you didn't think that your karate had grappling type of techniques. Many people that are in Shotokan don't know that Shotokan itself has throws. I mean, Funakoshi Sensei himself taught Kano a couple of throws as he was teaching in Kodokan. So, you know, going into those other type of arts where it was not watered down as much, then you will find things that are in the Southeast Asian arts that used to be in the traditional karate arts that might have been taken out because people didn't get up to that level and they left. But when they go into the Southeast Asian arts, they are reintroduced, and then that makes all that they had learned prior that much more effective and that much more deeper in their depth of knowledge.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it was like a aha moment when the, Filipino martial arts started like opening all those doors for me. And, you know, and I actually went through like a phase where I was like, oh my gosh, you know, why did I do, you know, karate for 20 years? But, you know, I was eight. You know, I was 8 years old, you know, didn't discover, you know, Aranis and Kali and Silat through Grandmaster Chris Petrilli until I was like, what, 23, 24 or something, you know, relatively later, you know, in training as opposed to like, you know, how kids get into martial arts really early nowadays, you know. So it's like, wow, you know, and it really opened up a lot. But, you know, it really made me see a lot more of what my style of karate was all about, because Bitokutan also had like a little bit of Wing Chun thrown in there, because Soke Bob Hill is skilled in Wing Chun. Shihan Yoichi Nakachi, the founder of Bitokutan, had other martial arts as well. But, you know, as we say, you know, you do what your dojo does. And unless you're exposed to other neighborhoods, so to speak, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to really get a full understanding of the culture. Right. So, but yeah, it's, I think being able to find the Bunkai is great. Now, one of our chat board people has a comment about kata. Let's see here. Oh, she says, I love kata and I've done it enough to where it becomes muscle memory. Sorry, there was a window that came up on my chat board, and it was weird. I have no idea who that person was. Okay, Deborah says, funny, as this discussion reminds me of another discussion a while back that I was part of when the katas were taught by old masters. And my chat board went away. Bob, did you sign into the chat board?
Yeah, but it's closed.
Oh, okay. Because I got kicked out of the chat board. But so anyway, she had a cool comment about how masters didn't teach deep stances. They showed. Oh, here we go. They use the shallow, easy to move from stances. The deeper stances were taught for only competitive tournament reasons. And what else does she say? And then the rest isn't really relevant to what we were talking about. But yeah, the reason why we started talking about all this was that, you know, like I've seen too many comments about people like on Facebook or YouTube saying that anyone that practices kata is stuck in the Bronze Ages or something like that. And I'm like, wow, really? Really? You don't see the benefits? Stop using Bruce Lee as an excuse. and that's where Sifu Bob had gotten into the conversation, because he does Jeet Kune Do. I don't. So I'm not quite sure, you know, what the Jeet Kune Do person's take would be on it. So, so yeah. But Bob, did you have any other comments about, you know, what forms and drills that Bruce Lee? That's what we were talking about. We were talking about drills.
Right. We were talking about drills being actual, would be considered forms. And when people say, "Oh, Bruce Lee never did forms." Well, that's a cop out, because yes, he did. And tell your student, well, if you'd spend more time doing the form, less time talking about it, you'd be able to get it down. And tell him I said so.
I will.
You were telling me that you spent half the lesson yesterday talking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of
doing. I had a lesson yesterday. I had a lesson, and one of the students had asked I'll just kind of see if I can generalize what he was trying to ask and in a roundabout way. He pretty much was asking me, what's the point of learning this form, right? I was teaching Tai Chi, and he kind of beat around the bush, but he was pretty much asking, what's the point? Do I have to learn this form to get good at Tai Chi? You know, why can't I just do push hands and, you know, and get good at that and, you know, learn to fight that way? And I spent like almost half of that lesson explaining, well, you know, we learn the form because it's part of the family style. And two, it teaches very good concepts. There's only 13 fundamentals in Tai Chi, and you have to understand them all if you want to be a good fighter in Tai Chi. And he's like, well, why can't we just, you know, why can't you just teach us the fundamentals and we just practice them? I'm like, oh, you mean like in Kung Fu where we say, oh, drop down horse stance. Now give me 100 punches. Ready, go. 1, 2, 3, 4. You mean like that? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, you know, that, when are you going to, you're going to fight someone from a horse stance? And, yeah, and he's pretty much looking for an excuse to not have to put in the work to get good at the form. And then he finally relented and said, it's because I have a hard time remembering, you know? So I'm like, okay, so you don't want to learn the form because you have a hard time remembering the form. And it's a long form. It's like 20 minutes, right? And he's like, well, yeah, I have a hard time remembering. And I said, well, you know, break down each of break down the form into little chunks applicable movement. And he's like, but it's a form. I'm like, yeah, so that's, it just went on and on and on. And finally I said, you know what? Why don't you and I practice the form first so that way you know what moves that you're asking me about, and then let's talk. And then he spent the next 2 hours just working on the first two movements, and he realized that, wow, there's a wealth of movement here, a wealth of little tiny things like where to shift your weight, where to turn your waist, and, you know, upper body moving with the lower body. He's like, I never really would have, you know, seen this before. It's so much different than fast martial arts. I'm like, no, nah, not really. The only thing that's different is we're moving slower. But here, this is why. So you can see it, you know. And he found out himself through practicing a slow form that he has a habit of flaring his elbow out when he does straight punches. And I said, no. You know, don't lift your arm up, you know, elbow first, because that's awkward. That's not relaxed. It's not relaxed. You know, lift it up by wrist first. And he kept doing it. And then I put two and two together, and I'm like, that explains why your punches flare out when you're doing fast forms. He's like, do I do that? I'm like, oh, yeah, you do. And I said, now you can't get rid of that habit, and it's showing now that we're slowing down. And so now he's really seeing the value in the forms, and I'm hoping that it really not necessarily makes him practice, but actually gives him a different outlook to his art, the way that he's going to practice it. So, yeah. Cool. So with that said, I want to remind our listeners out there about our phone number, 347-677-0699. It's about 7:25, so we've got about 35 minutes of showtime left, and we've got Grandmaster Daryl Sargent with us of Modern Combat Masters, also on Blog Talk Radio. Airs every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. So go check it out. That's another great show. Wednesdays, 6 p.m., Blog Talk Radio, Modern Combat Masters. Woo! Did a quick plug for you there, Grandmaster.
All right, I appreciate it.
Well, since you're with us, do you have any like open mic subjects that you'd like to talk with us about? We're like taking all callers. It's just nobody's calling.
No, I had really just called in to listen, but whatever you guys, you know, are talking about, I'm happy to chime in for a few more minutes before I got to head to work.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Anybody out there with a subject, give us a call, 347-677-0699. I'm going to call out Deborah Evans on the chat board. Deborah, think of a subject. Now she's stressing in front of her keyboard watch.
putting her on the spot like that. Come on,
yeah.
Deb, you can do it. What do you want us to
know,
talk about?
She just put LOL. That's not a subject, Deb.
No,
I
it's not.
I want to know who Miss Pretty is. There's someone called Miss Pretty that actually signed on to the board. And when I started reading Deborah's comment, a private box came up. And the private box was like a happy face kissing another happy face or something like that. And I was like, what the heck is that? Miss Pretty made no sense.
You know,
calling
the,
you out,
the, one of the person that you were talking to had talked about the lowest stances in comparison to the higher stances, and they said that it was done in relationship to what again? What did they say it was in relationship to?
The high stances. That the old masters taught kata with shallow, easy-to-use stances, I guess mainly for bunkai, but the deeper stances were used for tournament reasons.
Well, on a different viewpoint of that, and that's not to discredit anything that is said on that, the older masters, and it was according to the culture by which it was taught, when you think about karate, you're talking about more of an Okinawan-based type of Chinese, and they stayed in a higher, more shizentai or a more natural position. And so going into the Japanese and even the Korean, which was based out of the Shotokan originally, then the lower stances were brought in by Funakoshi in regard to the development of developing of strength and trying to get more of a dynamic movement to it. So it's not to discredit what she was saying about the tournaments and all that, but before that reason, you know, it was really based on these other reasons. When you look at traditional old school Okinawan karate, they still have a more shizentai. They still have a more freer or more relaxed type of postures. They don't really call them stances. Stances would signify a more stagnant type of movement, where posture is more of a transitionary movement.
Yeah. Like when I was, I remember when I was still doing karate, I used to look through all sorts of karate books. I think I checked out every book in the Seattle Public Library, you know, about karate and stuff like that, because I was just obsessed with it. But, I noticed that some styles would be more shizentai, you know, more upright. And sometimes their zen kutsudachis, their forward stances would be a bit more open than what I was used to, right? And that's when I realized that, wow, you know, there is not one way to do karate, you know, because I was taught hips forward, whereas, you know, some other styles would be a little bit more open in their zen kutsudachi, or their kokutsudachi was a little bit different, you know, that kind of thing. And that was the most interesting part about, you know, learning martial arts, was that there was, you know, that there was like another universe out there. And that there were other katas and other masters and stuff like that. So that's that was pretty cool. Okay, Robert, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I haven't checked my phone to see if I was on mute or not.
I'm trying to make sense of what we're talking about in the background, dude. I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
We'll have to talk later. Absolutely.
Okay. Oh my.
See, you and Daryl know what we're doing because you guys used to do it. You know, you're texting, you're Facebooking, you're talking, you're, you know, so yeah.
Oh my gosh! I still want to know who Miss Pretty is. Show yourself. And why?
Hey
am
guys,
I gotta
get ready to go to work. But,
okay.
Well, you do well, Grandmaster Daryl.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you guys for sliding me in here and everything.
Oh, my pleasure. It's always so much fun to have you join us.
Well, good. And you guys keep up the great work. I look forward to hearing
more.
So,
thank you.
Both of you.
Thank you so much. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. And that was Grandmaster Daryl Sargent, who's got another wonderful show here on Blog Talk Radio, Modern Combat Masters. And that was the show that I used to be the co-host on. But, alas, my new teaching schedule has taken over. So now Hanshi Daniel Vena is the new co-host alongside Grandmaster Daryl with Modern Combat Masters. So give that show a listen. The Modern Combat Masters show is part of the Doc Radio Network, which is dedicated to the life and teachings of the late Dr. Moses Powell. So go check it out. They have a lot of great guests over there. All right. So, oh, my goodness. Yeah, your texts were like
we'll definitely talk. Well,
yeah, we'll definitely talk. Well, I've got a phone meeting like at about 8:15 after we go off the air. But yeah, I think it's someone that's just getting in on our thing here because I see that I guess we do have four users. I'll just guess and assume that you got a private window on your chat board too.
Yeah, I don't know how you got kicked off though. That is so weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, after I closed that window, I got kicked off, and I think it was because you were trying to access it also or something.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It just popped up on my end. I didn't do anything. I love when things just happen. I don't do anything to interact with it, you know.
Yeah,
so
right.
What else would you like to talk about? We had a strong discussion on form, the usefulness of them. Some believe in them and some don't. From what I've seen, most people do believe in them because they come from an art that uses them. Not a lot of arts really do not have a form as a basis, some type of form silence. You know, like Craig Master Carter out in 29 Palms. He has over 75 forms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most styles don't go quite that nuts.
Right.
My hat's off to him to be able to remember that many plus. You know, some of them are more traditional, some of them may be tournament-based, whether they do musical forms or nunchucks or, you know, double nunchucks or some kind of weapon.
Right.
But something that struck me as so spot-on was something that the Grandmaster Daryl said, it's all up to the teacher.
The teacher will teach what he was taught.
And sometimes it's totally traditional. The bunk guy is spot on. And sometimes, like you were taught, figure it out. Well, I don't entirely believe in that because there are a lot of shadow techniques within the forms. Unless you are told exactly what they are, you don't know. Like, I've seen arm breaks in forms that are very subtle. You're just crossing your arms.
Yeah, they're all over the Tai Chi forms and stuff like that. And you know, I'm not gonna say that, you know, our teacher said figure it out and this is where you're gonna be a master. And that's not to say that he didn't teach us Bunkai. What I meant was he didn't spoon feed like a catalog of techniques like this and this.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah. He would say, okay, so here's a drill, quote unquote. Using the first three movements of like Pinyon 5, here's a drill, and this is one way you can use it. And then he would challenge us. Now, how would you use that same set of movements for, like, if you want to throw them instead? Well, what if you want to use it if they didn't punch at you? What if they already had a hold of you and then were trying to punch you with the other hand? So he would challenge us to think outside of the wrapper, to think outside of that box, outside of the Cracker Jack box, and to dig in there for the toy, basically. That's kind of what he was doing. You know, you have to, like, dig around to find the toy and, you know, probably even waste a couple of your Cracker Jacks to find the toy, that kind of thing. That was kind of what it was. And then, you know, if there were seminars, you know, he would always say, yeah, go to seminars. Yeah, sure. You know, and there are some styles where the teachers will take it very, very personally if you go out and study, quote unquote, with somebody else. You know, is that more of an insecurity with the teacher, you know, or what? You know what I mean? I don't know. Some people might look at it as a loyalty thing.
Well, yes and no. Good friend of mine, Don Baird, will not allow any outsiders. I have offered to teach for free to give back, and he won't allow it. He's had other people offer to teach free seminars, won't allow it, because he doesn't want his students to get confused.
I see where he's coming from. Yeah, I see where he's coming from, because I'm a firm believer in that if you're going to really study something else, be a black belt or an advanced, you know, very advanced practitioner before you go and study something else. You know, like if one of my yellow belts says, oh, I want to go and study Brazilian jiu-jitsu down the road, I'll probably say, probably not. You can, but it's really going to, it might confuse you when you come back here, and it's going to confuse you when you go over there, because you don't know your base yet. You don't have that foundation. So I see where Grandmaster Baird is coming from. I do. Because, you know, I'm kind of like that in the sense that I believe that you have to be, that you should be a black belt or in something before you study something else with the intention of getting good at that other art. Now, if it's something like, if you're just a seminar chaser, that's something entirely different, because I've seen people become ranked by just chasing seminars.
I've seen people get teaching credentials by going to seminars.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, that's what happens. I mean, you know, the last time I bitched and moaned about the Tai Chi industry and how some of the teachers can get certified in the course of a weekend, you know, and then go out and this reminds me of a story that one of my Tai Chi sisters told me. One of my Tai Chi sisters, Kim Ivy, one of my best friend Tai Chi sisters out there. There was somebody that came into her studio the other day and said, "Hey, can I pretty much teach at your can I rent space?" Kim met the woman because it was about renting space during the off time. But instead, it turned out to be, you know, can I teach here? How about you market for me? Set up the classes and I can just come teach it. Is that possible? And Sifu Kim goes, no, that's not possible. You know, this teacher only had, like, I don't know, not even a year of training, you know. She wanted to teach Qigong. I have an idea of where she got certified with this type of get teacher quick Qigong. And it just kind of destroys the integrity. But anyway, back to the point I was trying to make. You know, if a yellow belt goes and studies with somebody else, they're going to get confused because they're not even going to know how to apply it in that art, much less try to mix it in with our art, you know, and it's just going to, like, make a big mishmash, and they'll just end up with a bunch of, you know, mixed up chop suey stuff, and they're not going to understand anything. So I get where Grandmaster Baird is coming from, but not even his assistant coaches, he won't allow for a free seminar. He won't allow you to teach?
No, he won't allow me to teach. I've never even seen him offer a seminar. He'll offer seminars. Like he'll have like a retreat weekend where
mm-hmm.
he might be celebrating his teaching anniversary. Like a couple of years ago, I went to his 35th anniversary of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll have a special dinner for that, but while that's going on, he'll also have a couple days of his own seminars where he's the only one that teaches.
Oh, I see. Okay.
See, as part of that, but he doesn't stress going out and finding other means of having somebody else teach, or he won't bring them in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I kind of see where he's coming from in that aspect. So, and in a way, you know, I'm not, you know, quite that, you know, restrictive. I just think that someone should have a good grasp on their first art before they go out and cross train. Because, you know, I've had previous students cross train. They're no longer with us right now, but I've had previous students cross train, and it completely changes their way of movement for both arts. So it's never truly going to be, you know, that art or this art. It's kind of like in the middle, and it's neither really, it's none of either. You know, if you know what I'm saying, it's neither one of them. And it's like, oh my goodness, you know, and then they get frustrated when they get corrected, because then they get, it just goes on and on. They'll just get frustrated and not like being corrected, because that's not how we do it at the other place, quote, you know. So, yeah, it can get kind of weird. Now, Deborah had mentioned something as far as maybe a last-minute subject. She's like, hey, here's a subject, wipeouts. Well, okay, Deb, first off, I want you to remember that the term wipeouts is not a universal term. So I'm going to need you to find a different way of explaining that. So if you could type something in the chat board, that would be great. If you could find a different way of explaining that, because each martial art out there has a different version of wipeouts. The term wipeouts is not universal. I think it's only either Botokukan or only your dojo that calls it that. So if you could type something in the chat board there, that would be great. And but while she's typing, I'm going to assume that Deborah was talking about takedowns and sweeps or blitz techniques where you're hitting so hard that the person can't help but fall down. So I'm just going to assume that that's what she's talking about, but I don't know. How do you talk about sweeps and throws and blitz attack? How do we begin to approach that, Bob? I don't know.
I know.
It's not like we can say, oh, you know what, this is my favorite sweep, you know, because, you know, we would have to, like, really describe, you know, these takedowns, like, very detailed, so any martial artist would be able to pick it out, because not everybody knows terms. Like, you know, if I were to say, okay, we can suppu here, or we can do a kinjit here, no one's going to know what that is, you know, outside of Southeast Asian martial arts, right? So I don't know. So
okay,
please clarify,
Deb. Well, let's talk about simplicity then, because I'm all about simple.
This is what she said.
Go ahead.
She said self-defense for the street. Well, I guess that's all you had to say. So we don't call them wipeouts. We never called that at my dojo when I was doing karate. We just called it self-defense. So it's not a universal term. But, yeah, let's talk about simplicity, because that's really going to go in with self-defense for the street.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Now, what's how would you describe Keep It Simple for our listeners?
Directness, keep it right to the point. Remember when LL sales hits, body mechanics are very simple. Body manipulations are very simple. You've seen some of my body manipulations. They don't get any simpler than running my hand over your forehead and pointing to the ground, and you just buckle.
Right, yeah. And it's supposed to be simple
Or my manipulation around your neck where I do what they call a human sow and whip it out and then pull it back and snap it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it real simple.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's like... It has to be simple for the street folks, you know. None of this. A lot of people go. The people that nothing against MMA, okay. I love watching MMA, but you know all this, you know, the rolling around on the ground and the you know intricate ways that you can like get into this submission to that submission if they counter this submission or if they post over here and stuff like that. It's kind of like. You know, in the street, you really wouldn't be dealing with anybody, you know, countering if you hit them directly first. I mean, you know, no rules, you know, direct to the point, you know, rip the throat out, poke an eye out, keep it simple. You know, all the, I think what, that would you say, Bob, that a lot of people are, attracted to systems that have a lot of fancy dancy stuff because of the fancy dancy stuff, and they don't realize that the fancy dancy stuff is just drill. Like, for example, like Kali, you know, a lot of Kali and Eskrima and Arnis has like very like intricate Sinawali patterns and intricate trapping, counter trapping and snaking maneuvers and stuff like that. And it looks very cool.
Oh, and yeah, absolutely.
It looks very cool. But, you know, I've heard of people that think that's the end all be all and that, you know, a simple poke to the eye is, well, of course it's, you know, you should probably do more than poke to the eye, but to keep it simple is not good enough. You have to be, you know, it seems to me that a lot of people think, well, you know, if you can't trap and snake and do all this other fancy dancy stuff, then you're not a good fighter. Well, you know, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, I keep going back to what Burt Richardson said. He was teaching a trapping video, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you get lost in the traps and the snakes and the bindings and
mm-hmm.
and all this other stuff, what do you lose? You lose the hit.
Yeah.
Because you go from, let's say, trap to back fist. Well, they block
right.
you. So you consult to go to hit, they block you. So you get lost. And
yeah.
you don't concentrate on the hit.
Yeah.
Screw the trap. Hit them.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
as we get older, our hitting comes faster. Because we can't move like we did 20 years ago.
Nope, no matter how much I wish I could.
yeah, how'd you like to be able to do those nice aerials now?
I would. I just stood up and went, oh, I would.
yeah, and I told my wife, this is funny you mentioned that. I told my wife this morning, I said, you know, sometimes when my back's bothering me, I look like I'm George Burns. Put a cigar in my mouth. And since I wear glasses and have short hair, you would swear I was George Burns.
And you just got to start talking like George Burns.
hey, that was actually not bad.
it wasn't bad. It needed to be deeper. It needed to be deeper. But I agree. You know, I tell my own students, because, like, depending on the – like, the other day, I made up just some, you know, outside-to-outside snake, inside-to-inside. You know, I just made up this drill so people could use, like, both hands so you can go outside-to-inside, you know, clockwise, counterclockwise, and then same arm, opposite arm, and it changes and stuff like that. And people were getting lost and stuff. And I'm like, you know what? This is just a drill. This is just, you know – let's just get your body moving and let your body feel for reference points. That's it. You don't have to I'm not going to test you on this. And I think that's what people were afraid of, you know. I'm like, I'm not going to test you on this. You know, you've done these movements before.
But what one thing you learned, though, when you do drills, don't do drills you have to count around me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to play, and you wanted to count. And I couldn't count, and you didn't want to play.
Yeah, I'm like, count, man, count.
And everybody
it's a
was
drill.
Because by the time I reached 10, oh yeah, I was done.
Yeah. I was waiting for Michelle to, like, hold up, like, you know, a number, like, at Sesame Street. And Maria and Luis say it's the number 6. And this episode brought to you by the letter B and the number 6. Grover likes the number 6.
Dumbbell.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So yeah, keep it simple, folks, when it comes to the street, because you know all that fancy dancy like vining and trapping and you know trap hits, double hits, and all that other kind of stuff. You know, if you want to practice it again, keep it simple, because you know street defense isn't the born identity. It's I think that's where a lot of people, you know, they look at the movies that have like really great Kali movement in there, and they get so jazzed by it. Like I remember that there was when all those is it the Born Identity that had all the knife fighting in it? Was it that movie?
I think it was Born Identity, and they had also, of course, had Under Siege, the first one. Had
oh,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, Kali goes back on TV as far back as the 70s when Dan and Santo did a Chips episode.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that there was a big influx of people wanting to get into Kali after seeing all that. And you know, and I always have to tell people that, you know, you see that because would you really watch a movie that just had somebody cutting to the eyeballs and then breaking their neck? Would you really just watch that? You know, would you think it was an exciting movie when something's over in 2 seconds? Probably not. You want to see action. That's why they're called action movies.
Yeah, right? Go figure, right?
Yeah, and that, you know, and it was great choreography and just brilliant choreography. But I do remember seeing a big influx of people wanting to learn Kali because of that movie. And then, you know, kind of disappointed when it wouldn't be like that their first day, you know.
Well, yeah, it's like when Bruce was in Seattle, or was it, yeah, or Oakland, I don't remember where he was. He had a 400-pound bag hanging.
Mm-hmm,
he was
mm-hmm.
the only one in the school that could move it.
Right.
You know, they go into wushu. You did this. You said, oh, I'd love to learn how to do that kick, and you started studying wushu. Well,
mm-hmm.
how many people came in and said, I'd love to learn how to do that kick, and they couldn't do it on the first couple weeks? They quit.
That's exactly what happened. You know, after the first month, people started quitting, and, you know, I actually had to ask myself, wow, I'm paying to land on my head. I'm paying good money to hurt myself, or you know, but that's what I wanted to teach, and I figured, you know, no pain, no gain, I guess, you know.
Well, you know,
and when
it was funny, I was doing a couple videos with Felix Valencia, and James Liu himself was shooting B camera,
mm-hmm.
and I got taken down on the mat, and I got up and I looked at James and said, you get paid a lot of money to do this.
Yeah.
Where's my cut, damn it?
I know, right? I'm on the ground. Oh, my goodness, yeah. That's funny. So, yeah, people, keep it simple. And remember, though, too, folks, it's like, you know, especially if you come from a traditional art, how do I put this? Don't get too overconfident. Well, this goes to anybody in any art. Don't get too overconfident and think that, you know, your art is the end-all be-all, because how you do things and how it works in your dojo, unless you play with other people that don't fight like people in your dojo, you're really never going to know if it works or not, right? And I'm talking out of experience here, you know, like every dojo has its own atmosphere, and every dojo has like a flavor. Everyone moves kind of the same way, even though the techniques are different. At least that's how I've noticed in some of the dojos that I've studied. And everyone kind of moves the same way, even though techniques are different, body mechanics are a little different. There's a little the different kind of flavor. It's different though when people from other systems play with you and things just aren't the way that you are used to, right? And then what are you going to do? You know, someone else, you know, might best you in a sparring match, and then, oh, you know, dang. You know, I've seen some people get really, really disappointed and even jaded in their own art because, you know, first they think they're all that and they know all this stuff and they're a big know-it-all and this and that, and then they get beat by some, like, mid-rank belt in some other art, and now they're wondering, you know, what's going on? You know, is it my art? Is it me? Is it, you know, what is it? And to those people, I want to say, don't get a big head. Don't think you know it all. And definitely don't go around saying, well, I know I don't know it all, because that's still bragging. Humble bragging. Stop it. Just don't get a big head, folks. You know, when Grandmaster Kakoi Kenyete, he said, you know, if someone challenges you, you know, don't deny the challenge. And he, you know, he's nowadays he's talking about, like, if anyone wants to spar you, either from the same style or from other styles, you know, go into it with a inquisitive mind. Go into it with the intention of learning instead of, oh, I'm going to beat this guy. You know, don't let your ego come into it, because now you can't learn. If you really want to defend yourself in the street, you got to work with some progressive resistance. Bob knows that, you know, I know that, like, you know, work with progressive resistance, because sparring, you know, unless you're going, you know, full board with protective equipment and going to take each other down and, you know, and something, you know, it's not going to be like a, you know, sanbon kumite type of match. So keep that in mind, folks. All right. Any other last? We only have 3 minutes here, dude. So do you have any other last subjects you want to talk about?
You know, it's strange. I did not think we were going to last a full 2 hours.
I didn't think so either. I think, you know, I love how, like, one subject can, like, turn into several. I like how that works on these open mic shows.
Exactly. Well, I really enjoyed it. We got some great insight from Grandmaster Daryl.
Yep.
Great questions from of course our loyal listener Deb Evans.
Mhm. Yep. Deb's always there. So thanks for listening, Deb, and to whoever Miss Pretty is, thanks for listening. All right. So let's see, what's next? Sunday. That's the 31st. Okay. So, listeners, stay tuned onto the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page to find out who our guest will be for the 31st. It might be that friend of mine that I was talking about, Sifu Bob. So, it might be him.
Okay.
But if you, so we'll let you and I talk in the middle of the week, and I'll talk to him, and we'll figure it out.
Uh-huh.
Alrighty, thank you so much, Brother Bob, for joining me for another fun open mic, and thank you, listeners. We'll see everyone next week. Talk to everyone next time now. Bye-bye.